godless Lyra. Suddenly she thought about the subtler forms of influence demonstrated most publicly by Reyna with her songs. Perhaps she was under the influence of a skill?
But not being able to leave?
I would be killed if I left, Elaine responded. It's impossible for someone like me to survive in that violent world, and this might not be as convenient as Earth used to be, but the simple fulfillment of working hard and creating a community is enough for me. Informing Babitaka of the habits of Constance was a small price to pay for this life of freedom. But you aren't free,
Lyra wanted to say. Elaine's worshipful expression smothered those words in her throat. Instead, she took a step back and raised her gaze to the waterfall. There, perched right on the edge, was a bamboo house. Three flickering lights of mana sat within.
I'm glad you're safe,
Lyra said to Elaine. Before the other woman could respond, Lyra turned and disappeared. With Blink, she rapidly scaled the cliff and reached the house at the top. With a stormy expression, she knocked on the door.
Come in,
came the cool reply from within. That voice was familiar, proving she'd guessed correctly. This was the house of Babitaka. Lyra slid open the door and walked into a minimalist entryway. Seeing the shoe holder by the entrance, an odd thought struck Lyra.
If it was Randedly, he wouldn't need to choose whether to take off his shoes. He could just walk in. Of course, I bet his feet are unbelievably dirty.
In the end, she took off her shoes and headed down a short hallway. Framed pieces of foreign calligraphy hung on the walls, drawn in harsh brushstrokes. At the end of the hall was a small courtyard where a perfect square of green grass was ringed by a wooden veranda. There, Babitaka sat, flipping through the pages of an issue of People magazine. Lyra paused, recognizing the issue. It was one she'd read religiously when she was little, containing the interview of an actress she had wanted to become when she grew up. But that was over 10 years ago. The whole visual tableau, with piles of similar magazines on the old woman's left and right, was a bit too strange to swallow in a single moment.
You forgive an old woman her vices, Babitaka said lightly, as she slipped a bookmark into the magazine and set it to the side.
None of the harshness and cruelty that animated her face in the meeting with Constance was present. Instead, she seemed like any other older woman, graying and wrinkled at the edges.
I find it soothing to read them. I like to imagine their fairy tales from a time where a very different sort of self-involved magic dominated this land. But anyway, we should get to business. You're Lyra, correct? The powerful mage from Donnyton?
Babitaka smoothly moved from one conversation to the next. The old woman smirked.
I expect you are here to demand an explanation for this sanctuary and my coup in Turtletown.
Lyra pressed her lips together.
Yes.
Babitaka nodded.
This is normal. You can be considered a representative of Donnyton, which makes you my guest. Ryoji? Please bring us some tea.
About 10 seconds later, a young man with strong eyebrows walked out of one of the side hallways carrying a tray with a pot of steaming tea and two small cups. The tea was so fragrant, Lyra smelled its bitter, minty leaves immediately. But most of her attention was grabbed by the young man. He favored Lyra with a fish-eyed look the entire time he was in the courtyard, setting the tray between the two women and pouring two cups. Only when he was gone did Babitaka speak again.
Ryoji, my son, can be a bit protective. Please don't mind him. Anyway, I assume you have questions. Ask away.
Lyra cleared her throat, having used the time Ryoji glared at her to prepare.
Why do you cut out Constance's tongue every day?
Babitaka blew on her tea for a few seconds before responding.
Because it's necessary. That man has too much power with his tongue. To protect myself and everyone else, he needed to be silenced. Even to protect his own soul, which couldn't resist the temptation to abuse his abilities. Obviously, killing him would have complications for the village, so he must be kept alive. I am very protective of my kin, Lyra Silver.
Why do you trap people here?
Lyra said.
I do not trap people. They don't want to leave. I protect them.
After a sip of her tea, Bobby Taka continued.
You are a blessed individual. You've managed to adapt to the system, but others don't share your capability. Out there, they would die. Their individual power is small. They choose to come here and become something bigger than themselves, through unity and faith. Resilience.
Lyra took a moment to decide which of the blatant lies this woman spouted to attack first.
Isn't that nonsense? The system lets everyone improve, earn skills, and gather levels. If they wanted power, they could get it.
Bobby Taka favored her with an indulgent smile.
Isn't that the way of things? It is possible, but will it happen? Let me tell you my private theory. The system changed very little. Oh, it brought monsters and altered the laws of physics, but it did not change humanity. And when there is a group of people, there are the strong and the weak.
But,
Lyra began to counter and was interrupted.
Stats are just numbers. What matters is that special quality, that otherness that only a select few possess. Did they not say in the old world that anyone could become a famous actress? Yet how rarely is someone truly discovered? And how often do they last past their initial success and manage to resist the natural fade of time?
Bobby Taka chuckled and gestured at the magazines around her.
1,000 pretty faces lined up in a row. They blur together after a while, do they not? Some people are simply not destined for great things. That is fine. They can still work hard and still be a part of civilization. Their lives perhaps don't have meaning, but they can contribute to something meaningful. And that is the sanctuary.
Lyra's chest burned to hear this woman so casually dismissing the potential of humanity. Ever since Randidly had opened her eyes of wonder, she'd seen it everywhere. Humanity could grow and evolve. They could do great things. And today, witnessing the once dazzling Elaine wearing that basic dress and carrying a zealot's blind obedience?
It isn't the clothing or the strange religious vibes of this place that bother me, not really. It's the cowardice. Elaine is scared. Probably almost every person that's a part of the sanctuary is scared. And this woman told them that being scared is natural. It's simply their lot in life. That's why I cannot forgive them. But it's also something they chose.
Lyra's eyes became clouded. Bobby Taka was content to allow her to consider, continuing to enjoy her tea. But finally, Lyra opened her mouth.
And what about Craig, the Turtletown chief of police?
Bobby Taka's gaze narrowed.
Such a cunning child, aren't you, Lyra Silver? Yes, you're right. I am a hypocrite. That man, but only that man, is held against his will within the sanctuary. But I do not mind being a hypocrite to protect the fragile peace I've made.
Lyra nodded shortly and stood to leave.
Come back any time,
Bobby Taka said lightly to her departing back. Lyra rushed out of the bamboo house on top of the waterfall and left the small valley. She needed some time to think. Chapter 11. Randidly staggered backward, wounds covering his body. He let agony drop and downed a health potion, weaving between wild swings of the fake Yeti. It was just as large and fast as the real thing, only less consistent with its blows. Also, any wounds he inflicted on it instantly healed, and the illusion reformed around the attacks. Meanwhile, the real judgment rushed at his back, swinging both hammers and overlapped blows. He was forced to twist around and swing his spear to meet the more capable attacks. A shockwave sent Randidly stumbling again. His face twisted into a scowl. Congratulations, your skill Heavy Blow has grown to level 32. A small crack emerged in his spear. He eyed it with a wild desperation. A small crack in the massive spear is fine now, but if the fight keeps dragging on,
Yeah, this is the feeling. That old panic I thought was beaten out of me by Shoal. If they kill me here...
Randedly cut that thought off immediately. The two Yetis circled around him.
You cannot win,
the fake Yeti sang with Lyra's voice, smashing sideways with its hammer, forcing Randedly to block awkwardly with the shaft of the spear. The sudden impact caused him to cough up a mouthful of blood. He gritted his teeth to right himself, his eyes flicking sideways to the real Yeti. Once more, it stopped, giving him a small breath to regain his feet before it rushed forward. Randedly's eyes narrowed.
You haven't totally tossed aside your chivalry, then? Or are you torturing me for killing your minions? Ah, this is exhausting.
Congratulations. Your skill, Pierce the Skies, Shatter the Earth, Rare, has grown to level 3. He activated Pierce the Skies, Shattered the Earth, and leapt upwards. He landed some distance away from the duo, and the ground cracked and threw up a cloud of dust. With that small barrier obscuring the Yeti's vision, Randedly finally addressed his notifications. There were several about the synchronicity and minutes decreased, and there were also several for skill levels. Randedly honed in on 3 in particular. Congratulations. Due to your actions, you are developing your own personal skill. Skill is 75% complete. Congratulations. Due to your actions, you are developing your own personal skill. Skill is 100% complete. Please return to a village to obtain your new skill. Immediate skill creation is possible, but dangerous. Would you like to proceed? Yes? No? These messages were conflicting, but he had no time to hesitate. He needed power now. He jabbed his finger on yes. Warning, creation of a skill with insufficient fuel will lead to death. Do you wish to proceed? Yes? No? That gave him some pause. The strange, freezing, burning energy in his chest had been growing as he fought. Now it pulsed, especially in his throat. Randedly wasn't even sure he could speak currently, due to the burning numbness radiating from his throat and chest as the energy circulated. Almost as if it knew he was thinking about it, that strange energy pulsed faster. It urged him onward, and since it was his body giving him this message, Randedly clicked, yes. Congratulations, your own personal skill has been created. You have created the skill set 7 Kata of the Ashen Spear, Runic. You have learned the first kata, the spear advances, ash trails, rare, level 1. Congratulations, you are the 2nd person to create a skill set on your planet, plus 50 to health, mana, stamina. Congratulations, you are the 1st person to create something of the runic rarity in your Nexus class. You have gained the skill Superiority, level 1. Superiority, passive skill. Some individuals are simply anointed with natural advantages that their peers can only envy. Although all other factors indicate you should lose, you manage to succeed, despite the odds. Stats and skill levels are worth an infinitely small amount more than normal. Slight chance to earn a higher rarity skill. Effects increase with skill level. The skill set seemed to be something worth investigating, but Randedly didn't have time. He downed health and stamina potions as quickly as he could. But to his surprise, the two Yetis hadn't approached. They simply stood there, waiting for him to finish his business in the debris cloud. The real Yeti finished drinking its own pink potion and tilted its head.
Do you really think you can win? I have stayed my hand time and time again, but no longer. You shall now die, vermin. Repent.
The fake Yeti just smiled while the judgment raised its arm. Another vortex of snow appeared, condensing into a suit of crystal armor on the real Yeti's body. Even from afar, the air was chilly around him. Randedly looked down at his spear, at the growing crack, and sighed. Sam was going to be so annoyed with him.
Are you prepared?
Randedly asked, surprising himself. His heart twisted and turned, trembling with the emotions roiling within him, but his voice was calm.
One step at a time. For now, survive.
The Yeti flinched, only slightly, but it saw something in Randedly's expression that made it grow serious. It nodded, lowering itself into a fighting stance. The fake Yeti circled around, trying to get Randedly stuck between them, but Randedly ignored it. Dealing with both at the same time had cost him too much already. Instead, he raised his spear, bent his knees, and spoke in a clear voice. "The spear advances. Ash trails. Congratulations, your skill, the spear advances, ash trails, rare, has grown to level 2. The moment the skill kicked in, Randedly activated haste and empower, basically using all of his stamina for this one move. He bet everything he had on his new skill set. His knees exploded with force. Randedly thought he felt something tear in the joint, but already he was ripping forward through the air, an explosion of flame propelling him. The judgment of Frostbite's eyes widened. Randedly had already arrived right in front of him, his spine spear piercing forward towards the crystal armor. All the Yeti had time to do was cross his hammers in front of him in a defensive posture. Boom! Chapter 12. Congratulations, your skill Spirit of Adversity has grown to level 32. Congratulations, your skill Spirit of Adversity has grown to level 33. Randedly and the Yeti held each other's stares. Randedly glanced down at the broken shaft of his spear and shrugged. Almost disappointed, the Yeti nodded slowly.
It was as good of a match as could be expected in a place like this. Fighting is fun, Randedly said almost to himself, causing the judgment to burst into a fit of low chuckles, blood dripping from his mouth. Yes, it really is. If you insist on walking down this path, we will meet again. I look forward to it.
The Yeti slowly fell backwards, the top half of Randedly's spear buried into its chest. The shattered ice armor fell to pieces and melted away. His broken hammers of ice dropped to the ground with a dull thump. Randedly, regretfully, turned away and focused on Kim Lath, which had split into 4 human-sized Yetis. They waved their hammers at him in what it probably thought was a threatening manner. Randedly simply raised a stamina potion to his lips, considering.
Are you going to stay here and let me kill you or run away? Randedly muttered.
As if I need to run away from a spent, classless weakling like you,
the Yeti clone spat as one, rushing towards him. Randedly lowered the bottom half of his spine spear, aiming the jagged end at the closest one's chest.
I'll poke you full of holes until I find your core. Randedly's lips twisted into a smile. And then I'll crush it.
Lyra was born beautiful, and her parents always emphasized that to their relatives and friends. Her father was a screenwriter turned amateur director, and her mother was just pretty enough to be arm candy in B-rank flicks. But from the day Lyra was born, the pair of them were seized by a shared delusion that their daughter would be what they never could be. A star. Perhaps God felt sorry for them for a life of mediocrity, because they turned out to be right. Acting lessons, singing lessons, dancing lessons. Lyra's life was a merry-go-round of lessons, preparing her to be an actress. And at every lesson, Lyra excelled. It was when she was 7 that this finally paid off, and Lyra was recommended by her acting teacher. It was only a role as an understudy, but her parents were ecstatic. And on the first day, the original girl for the part was sick. Lyra stepped forward and performed the scenes with her own unique twist. At her mother's behest, she'd been practicing ruthlessly late into the night, just in case something similar happened. The director, slightly nonplussed, said, "That was really good, but I'm not sure if this is what the producers had in mind." Lyra simply shrugged and spoke the line fed to her by her parents.
That's how the character would have done it.
For several minutes, they stared at each other, the director struggling with how he should view Lyra, this tiny actress so profoundly sure she was right. Helpless, the director showed the producers the first day's footage. They fell in love with Lyra's version of Jen, and needless to say, even after she'd recovered, the original girl was told very politely that her services were no longer required. Because when you looked at Lyra, it was hard to look away. She had something inside of her that caught the eye. She never understood it. When she looked at herself in the mirror, all she felt was empty. She would reach out and drag her fingers across the smooth surface of the mirror, not admiringly, but wonderingly.
Is this what it means to be beautiful?
The 11-year-old asked the mirror with a soft voice. After her first movie success, Lyra's career exploded. Although she didn't always duplicate the rave reviews she received for her first and unexpected debut, and there were duds mixed in with her work as an actress, she never lost that spark that drew the eye, that it factor. When she was 15, a famous tabloid named her the hottest rising young actress of the decade. Due to that, she was invited out to a photo shoot that provided hair and makeup artists that completely changed up her look for a more adult style. A consummate professional, Lyra took it in stride and said nothing, even as she paid attention to the ways they sexualized her. She noted the outfits they picked and the poses they chose for her in the pictures. Later, alone in her room, she did her best to duplicate that hair and makeup, and did a rather abhorrent job. She practiced late into the night, and every night, despite other shoots that necessitated rising with the sun. 2 weeks later, she could do her makeup almost as well as a professional. She looked at herself again, slowly turning back and forth, examining her face and body from every angle. Both her parents sent her congratulatory texts for her magazine centerfold, but didn't call. After all, they understood how busy she was. They would be thrilled to see her and celebrate with her in person at the Hollywood premiere of her next new movie. Currently, some unavoidable business had them abroad. To Lyra, they mostly seemed to be in the business of spending her money. But honestly, the money meant nothing to her. The only time she felt at peace was when she fixated on the mirror and tried to figure herself out.
I am beautiful, Lyra said.
It was an undeniable truth. She heard it from every source. Even her own eye couldn't help but notice her smooth skin and symmetrical features. But hearing the words aloud made her incredibly tired. The next day, Lyra had her agent cancel all of her appointments, and she contacted a middle school friend with the right sort of connections. At Lyra's insistence, her friend hooked her up with just the thing for her ailing troubles, enough cocaine for a lasting party of two. After they snorted the drug, Lyra moved to sit in front of her mirror, while her friend did cartwheels over Lyra's soft carpet, laughing endlessly.
I am beautiful,
Lyra whispered to her reflection, the whole room vibrating with her words. She smiled, because there was no sadness in the statement this time. There was only joy, and up and up and up. Her body was soft and curved. Lyra allowed herself to wiggle in her chair, appreciating the amazing way her body could move. Even as her friend began to frantically call and yell through her phone at a pizza delivery employee, Lyra stayed in front of that mirror. For hours, she sat there, watching herself, hoping for a change. The moment felt like it was about to birth the profound truth that would be the reassurance she needed. The change came, of course, and it was exactly as she feared. The high faded. Her heavy-lidded eyes looked back at her, dull and unfocused. She wasn't beautiful. She never was. She was just seen as beautiful. Lyra disposed of the rest of the cocaine, sold her loft, and never spoke to that friend again. She threw herself into acting, searching for a different answer. Maybe she'd been wrong. Maybe it wasn't her, but the roles. Maybe she was just a conduit for the beauty. But that too seemed wrong. It was definitely her and others like her. Still, she couldn't see it, that factor that took her facial symmetry and made it irresistible. She was a bag of skin holding in blood just like everyone else. Without understanding the how, all she saw in her own body was hollowness. 6 months before the system would come to the world, on her 17th birthday, Lyra received a call to star in an action movie with a budget that doubled the previously most expensive movie she had ever been a part of. And Lyra said yes, not for the money, because also starring in the movie would be Vivian Plath, who the world agreed was the most beautiful woman on the planet. Perhaps she would give her an answer. Chapter 13. Randidly released a long breath. He felt overdrawn and overheated, and was somewhat surprised his long sigh hadn't come out as steam. The wounded and flickering fake Yeti staggered backward. It looked at him with eyes that were wide and white.
You... this is impossible. You don't even have a class. At this point, you should be...
Congratulations, your skill Ghastly Slash has grown to level 5.
Look!
Yeti Kim Lath jerked backward, unable to dodge Randidly's sudden assault, and another wound appeared across its chest. Over the course of the last 20 minutes, Randidly had worn it down through sheer tenacity. Although it possessed the same abilities of the Yeti, it possessed none of the battle experience. Kim Lath was actually quite weak when fought alone. The confrontation made Randidly realize something about fighting that he long suspected.
It seems to take both the stats and skills, but it fails on utilization. A good reminder that while skill levels should correspond to capability, they don't necessarily need to.
The monster panted several times, then, as Randidly expected, flickered and vanished. The tribulation reappeared farther up the slope, by the copse of trees from which Randidly had observed the judgment's descent in the first place. Its mouth continued to move, as though it truly couldn't believe Randidly's exploits. Then it spun and vanished. Randidly decided now was a good time to take a seat. His legs and hands trembled, the muscles resting uncomfortably between tenderized and deteriorating. The system would heal them quickly, but that didn't mean pushing for so long to his limits wouldn't have consequences. Plus, considering how many times he bottomed out his stamina pool... The first rays of light coming over the horizon made Randidly wince. He turned and looked back toward Franksburg.
My mana should be back in about an hour, but I really don't want them to come out to investigate and find me collapsed. I need to get a move on, catch up with the convoy.
Groaning, Randidly pressed his hands to the ground and tried to leverage himself back up. Honestly, this victory left him just as spent as some of his sparring losses against Shawl. When his hands seemed incapable of doing the job, Randidly pawed at the bottom half of the spine spear and propped himself up. It was about halfway through his hobbling up the slope that something occurred to Randidly.
Damn it. The top half of the spear. If I don't bring it back, Sam will kill me.
Sighing, Randidly turned around and began the excruciating descent to his starting position. Vivian was just as beautiful as Lyra expected, sure, but she was small-minded and petty. The woman didn't miss a single opportunity to thrust herself into the limelight or make snide comments about Lyra to the filming staff. Many a night on that project saw Lyra leaning her forehead against the mirror. It all just seemed so dull. There was no beauty in the posturing, in the jockeying for influence. There was simply a strange compulsion, as if this was the only thing that kept Vivian going. She was good at it, too, Lyra couldn't deny, though her competence in such a useless activity did very little to calm Lyra's sinking mood. There was no answer here. Plus, there was an unexpected and unpleasant development apart from Vivian. The love interest of Lyra's character seemed very interested in her, and not in a professional way. His hands always lingered just slightly longer than they needed during the scenes, and he would unashamedly check her ass out when she walked away from him. He was 12 years older than her. In a clinical way, she derived a small satisfaction from this and was able to distract herself from Vivian's exhausting games. After all, she worked very hard, daily, to cultivate the physique she had, diet and exercise, and more exercise, and supplements. None of it felt glamorous or beautiful. It just felt like she was coming down from a high, a very long one, fed to her by her starstruck parents. Parents who were constantly out at parties, talking about how proud they were of Lyra, enjoying their imagined piece of the pie. Strangely, Lyra found herself spending more time with one of the men who worked as a sound grip, drawn by his even-keeled temperament and relative lack of interest in fawning over her because she was in movies. A grizzled man named Mr. Haas. Her time with him was what enabled her to stomach the bloated special effects and the over-the-top script. Lyra wondered if she would ever act in a movie again. They started to seem so empty from the inside. Not that she could get acting out of her system, not now, not after so long. Her relationships were a series of masks, which only had one thing in common, that she was beautiful, seen. If only she knew what existed under the masks. Although, perversely, Lyra began to hope that what was deep down wasn't so beautiful after all. Then, the system came. Her old world ended in a blazing climax of numbers of nerdy dreams. In a detached manner, she watched her male love interest, who'd stared so longingly at her ass, get his intestines ripped out by three wolverines. Sam Haas had dragged her and the nearby Cal, Vivian, and Elaine away, and managed to get them all into his beat-up Ford pickup truck. They drove out of there, hoping for a piece of sanity. Lyra carefully read the notifications. She'd never played games, though she recognized some of their qualities in these, which was exceedingly strange. The next day, still on the run, they crashed and had been subsequently saved by the man who would change her life, although Lyra didn't notice anything in particular about him at the time. Only later, at Randedly's suggestion, did Sam drive to that small valley with the squabbling teens and the deserted hut. Then, one night, against Sam's suggestion that they stay hidden because their identities might cause trouble, Lyra wandered away and saw a figure standing alone on a stump in the dark. She crept forward to get a better look at the weirdo, who was raising his hands above his head. He would slowly lower them, pointing at a tree across the clearing. A bolt of blue energy shot forward, smashing into the tree, burning away some bark. The dazzling bolt of energy remained burned into her wide eyes, forever etched on her retinas. It had been bright and pure. It had been beautiful. A notification popped up. Congratulations, you have unlocked the Path of Wonder, 0 out of 10. Although it is a strange path, your feet itch, and in your heart, you know there lies your destiny. Of course, that figure was Randedly. Over the course of the next day, Sam taught them what little they had learned about skills from Randedly. Lyra had gone off in the woods and practiced endlessly, getting the physical fitness, dancing, singing, and acting skills high enough that she could finish off the path with her path points. Congratulations, you have completed the Path of Wonder. Although your eyes see, more than that, your heart yearns. As you continue to climb higher, following your path, you only find more wonders that lure you deeper. You walk quickly into the deepening night, unafraid of its mysteries. You have learned the skill Eyes of Wonder Level 1, Mana plus 50, Mana Regeneration plus 5, Wisdom plus 10. Eyes of Wonder Level 1, see the truth and beauty in all things. You can peer slightly into the workings of the system. As skill level rises, your gaze shall grow more discerning. You may understand new portions of the system when your skill increases. When Lyra returned to the camp, she could now see auras like soft colors around people. Sam's was a deep purple. Vivian was a mustard yellow. Cal, pink. And Elaine, a mauve. She sought out Randedly once more. As she watched him produce large orbs that exploded with force, she opened her eyes of wonder. For a long time she'd hesitated, afraid of what she would see. But she shouldn't have. He burned emerald in her vision, a deep green of the lively rainforest. The aura around him pulsed, shrinking visibly as he used his magic, but seemed to grow more intense at its core all the while. His emerald color matched his eyes, though it was filled with so much more complexity than that. His aura included flashes of light green, the color of warm grass in summer, and golden, too, like the gaze of a wild beast. It pulsed evenly like a heartbeat, and it seemed to come alive under her vision. The longer she studied him, she began to see dozens of strange formations within his aura. strange shapes that the energy flowed through. They were mesmerizing and complex, and Lyra couldn't get enough of them. For whatever reason, she knew down to her core that these shapes were him, told in dozens of simple truths about himself. They flowed together, continuous and multifarious and endless, smoothly transitioning into the next. It was beautiful. It took her breath away. Although the youth was rather plain by Hollywood standards, his gaze was direct and strong, and he blazed with an aura that kept Lyra enthralled all night. The next day, when he surprised her by coming to their camp to speak to Sam, she dumbly blurted out the first thing that came to her mind.
It looked like fireworks.
Huh? The man who would be Ghost Hound glanced at her, as if shocked to find her there. Lyra gestured awkwardly, for the first time in her life, tongue-tied. After all, she wasn't sure at all what sort of mask she should wear around this strange man who burned emerald.
Fireworks. You were doing magic earlier, right?
Lyra pictured the way his aura would gather and burst to produce the spells he made. She looked down at her own hands. She had worn herself ragged finishing the newbie path and earned the skill Mana Bolt, but to her eyes, her own aura was colorless and exceedingly small.
Mine don't look like that at all.
To demonstrate, Lyra shot her own pathetic Mana Bolt, hitting a nearby tree.
Your skill level is just low. As you raise it, and your intelligence, it will get stronger and brighter, Randidly responded, his voice confident.
Lyra did her best to hide her embarrassed blush in the shadow of her hood. She felt like a dumb asshole. Why the hell had she said it looked like fireworks? Chapter 14.
Fine then, Mr. Ghost Hound. Kimlath sat in its shadowy lair, its eyes glittering. You might be overwhelmingly strong. Impossibly so, due to that interference. But...
The tribulation's body reformed to become Randidly. Madness stretched its expression into a wide Cheshire smile.
But your precious Donnyton, can they really withstand as much abuse as you?
Once Randidly's mana returned, he experimented briefly with using root manipulation to help him move quicker through the forested area north of Franksburg. Unfortunately, a 10-meter distance emptied his mana pool and reminded him why mana and stamina were incredibly different. Congratulations, your skill root manipulation has grown to level 39. Randidly sighed and shook his head. At least his vitality had been steadily remaking his flesh into a semblance of his usual physical abilities, so running became easier. However, Randidly still paused to meditate and examine the skill levels he gained in the tense battle against the judgment and the tribulation. Congratulations, your skill meditation has grown to level 37.
Pretty good haul, Randidly's mouth quirked up. Truly, being desperate brings the best results.
Spear mastery had increased by 2, phantom thrust and spear phantom's footwork by 3, eyes of the spear phantom and phantom half-step by 1, dodge by 2, fighting proficiency by 3, block by 1, haste by 3, sweep and empower by 2, calculated blow by 1, edge of decay and ghastly slash by 4, pierce the skies, shatter the earth by 2, agony by 3, physical fitness by 1, pain resistance by 3, grace by 3, superiority by 1, and bacterial regeneration by 2.
Plenty of path points to spend on some paths, Randidly grinned.
Then, right as he was about to close all his notifications, a new one popped up. His eyes widened.
During the fight, I must have continued to decrease the time until the blessing was assimilated.
Congratulations. You have fully absorbed the blessing from the Patron of Ash. The soul skill, Blessing of the Patron of Ash Level 1, is available to you. You may either retain your current and forget this new soul skill, retain the new and forget the old, or attempt to combine the two. All previously obtained benefits will be retained. Warning, if the two soul skills are combined, an inferior skill may be obtained, based upon compatibility. This action cannot be undone.
There was no real choice here.
always forward, holding tightly to the spear as best he could. Randedly chose to combine the skills. Soul skills, combining. Warning, compatibility is at 41%. Do you still wish to proceed? Yes? No? The compatibility was comically low. After such a brutal struggle earlier in the day, Randedly wanted to just lie down without proceeding. His soul skill earned him bonuses for all the path points he spent, in addition to what he earned from the other path. Spear of Rot Mastery was definitely the main reason his growth could keep up with the classers springing up in Donnyton and now Franksburg. His heart seemed to shrivel. If he lost that... But if I'm unwilling to take risks... Randedly calmed himself with a great effort of will. He raised his hands and clasped them together, squeezing until his knuckles were white. I cannot let fear guide me. Fear is there to warn of dangers, not to make intelligent decisions. 41% is low, but it's not that much lower than 50%. It's just a coin flip. The justification felt feeble, even to Randedly, but he pressed his eyes shut and forced himself to believe it. He clicked the button to proceed. The confrontation against the Patron of Ash was incredibly dangerous, and the system always rewarded brushes with danger. Randedly's prize should be similarly impressive. He felt the two soul skills, could almost see them floating within his chest. The warm power of the blessing from Patron of Ash opposite the cool rot and deadly accuracy of Spear of Rot Mastery. They circled each other like duelists, steadily approaching one another. As they neared, slowly spinning in similar orbits around his core, Randedly's heart began to quicken. A strange excitement filled his body as he imagined possessing both of these forces, and within him another beating emerged, a pulsing of that strange, icy-hot energy. The energy triggered changes in both. The two forces began to release auras that lingered behind them. The distance between them continued to shrink, increasing the speed of their orbits. The heat of the blessing burned away the remnant spores of the rot, and the rot settled neatly into the area left cleansed by the heat. Faster and faster they accelerated, and the energies turned increasingly unstable, rushing towards an explosive collision. Both seemed completely unwilling to tolerate the other. Instinctively, Randedly sensed that if they clashed directly, that dangerous 59% outcome would be the result. He mobilized all his willpower, stretching out spectral limbs to keep them apart. The approach stabilized somewhat, but the two soul skills decided that if they couldn't meet, they would move quicker, and their orbits hummed with force. No sooner had the spores been laid, they were burned away, creating a smoky, flaring tension. Randedly refused. Not like this. Randedly's eyes burned emerald in the mid-morning sun. I'm not going to just let you collapse down and destroy all the work I've poured into this. His growth potential would develop even further if he succeeded here. Although Randedly didn't know how to accomplish the 41% outcome of the fusion, he knew the system responded to want and need, and every ounce of him craved this. Every inch of him needed that strength, so he could live, so he could protect the people who relied on him, so he could find the people from his past and lay to rest any lingering ghosts. The pulsing in his chest grew more insistent. If you crave something, take it. For a brief second, Randedly's green eyes flickered and then burned a sickly violet. A cold, numbing kernel, alongside the concentrated core of heat from his rage, flowed out of him, moving to settle between the two swirling energies. He seized upon that pulsing strangeness and became empowered by it. His willpower gathered itself into a small ball, creating an oppressive pressure of its own. His reach pressing outward and counteracting the strange gravity that was drawing the two incompatible soul skills together. Their orbit stabilized, slowing slightly, but still swirling around each other in an endless cycle. Rot, followed by a cleansing fire, followed by creeping rot. Panting, Randedly fell to his knees. Congratulations, you have obtained the soul skill Cycle of Rot and Ash, level 1. All previous benefits have been retained. Fuck you, Randidly whispered to the system. He swayed and dropped his forehead to the ground. The weakness that struck him then was different than the mental emptiness of mana and the physical weariness of stamina. He felt truly incapable of moving. That icy hot energy he briefly encountered and used to squeeze everything together vanished, leaving him with just his body. With great difficulty, he rolled onto his back. His eyelids fluttered and drifted closed.
Well, I guess I'll rest here for a bit.
Newell gasped and stood, knocking over the table that he and Daniel had been playing chess on.
Prepare for battle, he whispered, looking wide-eyed at Daniel.
As Daniel opened his mouth to reply, Glendale rushed in, looking flustered.
Daniel, there are monsters everywhere and—
Call the council,
Daniel said grimly, his voice only trembling slightly with fear. Had it been Daniel from a month ago, he would have panicked. Now he'd grown accustomed to such emergencies.
Is anyone out on patrol?
Declan is, Glendale whispered. And his squad was right where the monsters appeared. His squad has already suffered 2 casualties. I've guided him towards an area to escape, but—
Enough!
Daniel's frown deepened. If it was enemies at a level that they were threatening Declan's squad.
Wait until the council gets here, then explain.
Daniel's gaze turned to Newell.
What do you know?
Just that Donnyton's tribulation has come. And it's strong,
Newell said simply.
I would like to remind you that the victory and loss is determined only by 2 lives, my own and the tribulation. Whichever of us survives gains the village. Either it continues as a village, or—
Newell closed his mouth, his face taking on the pained expression he got when he said too much. Daniel studied Newell.
This was new information.
What Newell was essentially saying, everyone was expendable but him. Well, fuck that.
What's happening?
Donnie asked, scanning around the table, his eyes landing on Glendale. Only 6 minutes had passed, but the ghostly whispers in their ears had drawn the entire council to the main building of the trainee village. Except Declan, who from Glendale's sweaty brow was still encountering quite a bit of trouble.
I don't know how I missed them. It's like they just sprang into existence. All of a sudden, the area to the north was filled with monsters. From what I can see, there are 2 tier 1 raid bosses, and a tier 2 as well. It's like someone was hiding them this entire time.
The tribulation,
Daniel said, his eyes glittering.
It's not directly powerful, but seems to be skilled at subterfuge. It apparently knew enough about us to avoid your ghosts, which is disturbing. What sort of numbers are we talking?
I mean, only about half the amount of a normal monster horde, but their levels are all at least 24, because the raid bosses have had time to spawn.
Rough sledding,
Dozer rumbled, his face peaceful.
And Declan?
Donnie asked.
Still being chased by one of the raid boss's forces, but—
Glendale said, but Regina interrupted.
Tell him to distract and engage. At that level, we can't take them all on at once. Better to lure those we can to the village, too, so we can make use of the aura of Arbor. No need. They will come,
Newell said,
seeking my life. Your utmost priority.
Defense for now. Gather ourselves for a strike,
Sam said, rubbing his chin.
The Mage Corps can probably blow a pretty large hole in their lines. It's a bit more awkward without Clarissa, but it should still work.
Regina nodded.
My thoughts exactly. Donnie, will you take your squad and rendezvous with Declan? Dozer, you are on mop duty. Take the numerals with you. It's time to see if all their swagger is worth anything. Save your strength as much as possible.
She turned to Newell.
Do you know where the tribulation is?
He hesitated, then shook his head. Regina glanced at Glendale, who simply shrugged.
Sighing, Regina said,
Well then, we will hold until we get a lead. In the meantime, the important targets are the raid bosses. They will be coming through the quarry, yes?
ETA 10 minutes, Glendale reported.
Donnie, Dozer, and Ptolemy left to reinforce their lines. Glendale closed his eyes, commanding his ghosts. Sam glanced grimly at Regina and Mrs. Hamilton.
If we don't find where it is.
Damn, It's really rough missing both the Ghost Hound and Clarissa. Their firepower would alleviate a lot of pressure,
Mrs. Hamilton muttered.
But what can we do?
Regina asked. She gave a sharp look to the rest of the group.
We don't have some of our most dangerous warriors. But that doesn't mean our mission has changed, yes? Let's cut these bastards to pieces.
Chapter 15. Declan raced forward, his expression locked into a scowl. The ambush had been unexpected, but nothing they couldn't handle, until they harried and disengaged, seeking to gain some space and backed up into another enemy. The first group of monsters were Cyclopes, tall, physically powerful beasts who were deadly in close proximity and slow. The second group were skeletal horses, possessing more than enough speed to chase down their group. Luckily, they weren't controlled by one leader. The resulting friction between the groups when they encountered one another allowed Declan and his squad to recapture some of their upper hand. By sticking to the space between the two groups, they kept enough distance to not get crushed by the Cyclopes, and remained far enough away from open stretches to not get run down by the skeleton horses. And they would have done it perfectly, without any casualties, if Ivan hadn't madly tried to finish off a Cyclops for the stat gains. In a fit of fury, the Cyclops struck. Ivan's body splattered against the creature's skull by its thick palm, a sight Declan wouldn't soon forget. It was a good, if costly, reminder that this wasn't a game. They were running in a long arc, angled to bring them back towards Donnington. A strange root sticking out of the ground caught Declan's attention. It pointed. Declan immediately shifted, following its direction, hand signaling to Tara and the rest of the crew to follow. They flowed smoothly behind him, nervous, but they had faith in their squad leader. If they hadn't, they would have broken when Ivan died. Their path cut them sideways through a few Cyclopes, but they followed without complaint. Daggers and throwing hatchets and other projectile weapons hit the vulnerable eyes of the nearby enemies. Once they got wind of it, their eyes snapped shut, and it bought the squad the few seconds needed to dash through. Declan signaled again, and the whole group increased in speed, rushing towards a copse of trees 400 meters away. They would burn through their stamina reserves to get there, but if Declan's suspicions were correct, the trees were thick with low-hanging vines. He ducked under and led the group in, not stopping even as the Cyclopes chased after them.
Declan, if we stay here, we're going to get trapped,
Tara said nervously, glancing around.
Something about these trees.
She froze when the vines moved, revealing a suspended floating mass of rot and flesh. Thorn had grown since Declan last saw it, and grown a lot. The mass of flesh was probably just as large as he would be if he curled up into a ball. The air below it was thick with thorny vines, sinking into the ground and spreading around, covering the entire group of trees.
Let them come, Declan said, turning to the group with a manic glint in his eyes. We're going to make our stand here. And we're going to bleed every last motherfucker that tries to come for us.
As if understanding Declan's words, the whole copse began to rumble. Thorn vibrated in pleasure at the thought. The troop of Cyclopes crashed forward, ripping the trees up by their roots. Thick, thorny vines snaked under their feet and slid up, knocking them off balance. Declan flashed forward, arriving at the Cyclops' neck in a second. He slashed twice, once on the jugular, once on the eye, and took a spike as long as his forearm from his ring and drove it into the Cyclops' heart. The thing staggered, shocked and weakened by its lifeblood pouring away. Thorn picked up its feebly struggling body and threw it at two other approaching Cyclopes, knocking them to the ground. Tara and another member of his squad leapt forward, making several deep cuts into the fallen duo, and retreated. Thorn picked up those bodies and threw them around, knocking even more to the ground. With a roar, another wave of Cyclopes arrived, ripping away the ever-dwindling trees that hid Declan's squad. Again and again they struck, and more Cyclopes fell, but a huge number still remained. Their high level meant dealing a killing blow was difficult, even with them distracted by Thorn. Blood pumped out of their wounds, but still they staggered to their feet, their single eye burning with hatred. Declan tightened his grip on the knife given to him by the Ghost Hound and rushed forward. That dagger was hot and seemed to be hungry for flesh. Declan planned to feed it. After all, nothing was ever accomplished by complaining about a problem. You had to stand straight and face it. Or in this case, kill it. Paolo, with a class of brawler and current leader of Squad 1, cracked his knuckles. After removing the bone equipment made by Sam to signify his position from his ring and putting it on, Paolo turned and grinned over his shoulder at the rest of the squad.
Let's show 'em why we are the best!
Kale, with the class of ranger and current leader of Squad 2, snorted. Kale turned to his squad and said,
Everyone be ready to provide relief when they crack under the pressure.
Belay that order, Squad 2, Paolo commented. I outrank your squad leader, and therefore you need to obey me.
They were moving at a quick speed towards the hastily assembled wall past the quarry. Squads 3 through 6 were assigned to support them, and only a short distance away. Some mid-20s ranked squads were trooping over after that, but they'd taken longer to assemble. For something like 10 minutes, squads 1 through 6 were required to hold the quarry, with squads 1 and 2 at the front.
Ignore that belay, Squad 2, Kale said haughtily, drawing his long knives. Squad 1 has gone senile with fear. It seems it falls to us to lead the charge.
To their surprise, they were beaten to their location by the enemy. A dozen or so skeletal horses streamed through the shattered gates, headed right for them. Paolo snapped the clasp on his bone gauntlets into place.
Squad 1, how do we treat insubordinate inferior squads?
Just like enemies,
the men shouted, breaking into a sprint.
And what do we do to enemies?
Kill 'em good!
Kale rolled his eyes, his squad right behind the first, weapons drawn.
Squad 2, what do we do to enemies?
Kill them first!
Paolo glowered.
Squad 1?
Kill 'em better!
Their lines met the charge of the skeletal horses. Paolo's fist smashed into the leading horse, shattering its skull to powder. Kale moved like quicksilver in the night, cutting a horse at the knees, where it collapsed, and buried another long knife in its skull. Randidly woke with a yawn, feeling remarkably well rested. He sat up, his eyes immediately snagging on movement above him. He raised his hand and had an incinerating bolt ripping outward before he'd even registered the target. Whoosh! Congratulations, your skill incinerating bolt has grown to level 7. The headless corpse of a squirrel, the flesh of its neck seared shut by the heat of Randidly's skill, slowly leaned backward and fell off the branch. It hit the ground with a thump. Randidly coughed and glanced around him. He rubbed the back of his neck.
Note to self, make it difficult for people to surprise me awake. Seems like I'm not much of a morning person.
Randidly hopped to his feet, brushed himself off, did his best to ignore the squirrel corpse, and opened his path screen to spend some of the path points he earned in the previous battle. Altogether, including some left over from previously, he'd gathered a little over 50 path points. Randidly chuckled to himself. Not enough to finish off the Phantom Thrust path, but more than enough to see the usefulness of his new soul skill. Randidly put the first 5 path points into the Phantom Thrust path, earning him +1 agility. He obtained nothing from the soul skill. Randidly put another 5 path points into the path, earning +1 strength. This time, Randidly received a bonus from the soul skill. Cycle of Rot and Ash, +15 health and +2 vitality.
That's pretty substantial.
Randidly made a pleased noise. It took 10 instead of 5 path points to receive the benefit, but the increases waiting for him were decent. Randidly dumped the rest of his path points into the path. The remaining path points earned him +4 agility and +4 strength. The results from the soul skill made his eyes widen. Each took 10 and were slightly different each time, giving powerful gains. Randidly wasn't sure if the rotation continued, but even this much was quite a bit. First was the health and vitality, and then came +3 control and +2 free distributable stats. The third benefit gave him +15 stamina and +1 agility and strength, then +3 focus and +2 more distributable stats. Finally, the fifth rotation. plus 15 mana and plus 1 to all types of regeneration. The distributable stats randomly put into resistance to address its deficiency, leaving him with a status that was quite respectable. Randomly Ghost Hound. Class, dash, dash, dash. Level, not available. Health, 556 out of 548. Plus 8 buff. Regeneration per hour, 234.75, plus 12 buff. Mana, 12 out of 874. Regeneration per hour, 91.75. Stamina, 601 out of 678. Regeneration per minute, 85, plus 4 buff. Vitality, 70, plus 4 buff. Endurance, 42. Strength, 60, plus 12 buff. Agility, 79, plus 12 buff. Perception, 41. Reaction, 58. Resistance, 27. Willpower, 70. Intelligence, 96. Wisdom, 46. Control, 85. Focus, 53. Skills. Soul Skill, the Cycle of Rot and Ash, level 53. Basic. Passive, Running, level 23. Physical Fitness, level 35. Spirit of Adversity, level 33. Dagger Mastery, level 13. Spear Mastery, level 54. Fighting Proficiency, level 44. Mental Strength, level 17. Edge of Decay, Uncommon, level 23. Grace, level 13. Active. Sneak, level 33. Dodge, level 40. First Aid, level 14. Block, level 30. Calculated Blow, level 23. Resistances. Acid Resistance, level 23. Poison Resistance, level 16. Pain Resistance, level 23. Curse Resistance, level 3. Fire Resistance, level 20. Utility. Farming, level 23. Plant Breeding, level 9. Potion Making, level 33. Analyze, level 24. Refine, level 15. Pathfinding, level 18. Map Making, level 7. Sewing, level 11. Cutting Vegetables, level 2. Manual Labor, level 3. Digging, level 5. Cooking, level 16. Extract, level 1. Bacterial Regeneration, level 3. Superiority, level 2. Stamina. Attack Skills. Heavy Blow, level 32. Sprinting, level 19. Phantom Thrust, level 51. Phantom Onslaught, level 14. Sweep, level 31. Roundhouse Kick, level 20. Ghastly Slash, level 5. Pierce the Skies, Shatter the Earth, rare, level 3. Boosts. Iron Skin, level 27. Spear Phantom's Footwork, level 43. Eyes of the Spear Phantom, level 29. Phantom Half-Step, level 19. Haste, level 32. Spear Deflect, level 12. Empower, level 33. Seven Kata of the Ashen Spear, Runic. The Spear Advances, Ash Trails, rare, level 2. Mana. Attack Skills. Mana Bolt, level 30. Spearing Roots, level 16. Arcane Orb, level 23. Magic Missile, level 6. Healing Palm, level 8. Fireball, level 30. Pollen of the Rafflesia, rare, level 14. Summon Pestilence, level 20. Agony, uncommon, level 26. Incinerating Bolt, level 7. Circle of Flame, level 6. Boosts. Meditation, level 37. Mana Shield, level 25. Root Manipulation, level 39. Mana Strengthening, level 15. Wall of Thorns, level 7. Unique. Inspiration, unique. Blessing of the North, unique. Blessing of the East, unique. Blessing of the West, unique. His skill list was truly expansive as he began picking up more and more passive skills that gave him small bonuses. Most promising for the future were the superiority and bacterial regeneration skills, which would probably give him an edge in battle that no one else would have. In addition, Randidly wasn't sure how, but he believed he would be able to expand his skill set. He recalled that the notification stated he was only the second person on Earth to create a skill set, so there were others out there who were strong. It was the only runic rarity item currently made, which gave him some confidence moving forward. But this wasn't enough. It wasn't nearly enough.
In terms of power and breadth of skills, I'm starting to get there. Based on the abilities shown by Kim Lath, killing it will be difficult. I'll need to find its body.
His face twisted into a scowl.
That's even before I consider the trick it pulled, putting a raid boss within Franksburg's newbie barrier. When I get back to Donnington, I'll have to warn them to watch out for sudden attacks.
Chapter 16.
Donnie looked at the blood-soaked ground, shock clear on his face. The attack had come suddenly, and the resident assassin jumped at the chance to head to the battlefield. In the middle of a meadow, with its grass now matted with blood, the raid boss lay dead and wide-eyed on the ground. Like hungry ghosts, Declan's squad walked among the bodies, slicing larger gashes and some cyclopes, removing projectile weapons from others. All the while, the seemingly infinite vines of thorn moved, picking up and squeezing bodies dry for just a few more drops of blood.
Declan?
Donnie said, unsure of how to proceed. He'd come to reinforce them, but when he'd arrived, the Cyclopes had already been practically bled to death.
Oh?
Declan looked up, knowing instantly what Donnie struggled to say. He raised a hand to his mouth and shouted,
No rest for the wicked, boys! Looks like there's more monsters to kill!
Donnie took several steps backwards, because not 3 seconds later, he was surrounded by Declan's squad, all of them covered in blood, most cradling broken arms, drinking health or stamina potions.
Another day in the life,
Tara muttered, producing an apple and biting into it.
The next order of business is moving to reinforce Dozer's division against the Tier 2 raid boss,
Donnie said, recovering from the shock. He grinned at the tired-looking squad and turned and walked away.
We'll head over now, but just make sure you shower before you head back to the village, all right? We have standards in Donnington.
Dozer advanced, using his large club to batter and crack the shells of the flood of beetles bearing down on the village. His squad was barely holding together, but they couldn't switch out. The usual Legion-style tactics didn't work on these enemies. Their shells were too tough, shrugging off most attacks. Magic was reasonably effective, and the Mage Corps was providing much-needed support, ripping through whole lines of beetles. But they charged endlessly, their powerful mandibles clicking dangerously. These were the spawn of the Tier 2 raid boss, and they were just as tough as their level of 28 indicated. At the back, Dozer had even seen some level 30s directing the beetles. With Donnie's squad out to reinforce Declan, and squads 1 through 6 blocking the skeletal horses from the north, there was only Dozer to hold this front. A beetle cut close to the man next to Dozer, biting into his knee. The man fell with a cry. Dozer roared, opening himself to an attack by performing a huge overhand blow that smashed down on the beetle, cracking its shell and squashing its body into the ground. One of the support squads dragged the man back, pulling him to the healers, leaving Dozer even more exposed. 2 more beetles aimed for his exposed side. Dozer gripped the club with one hand, grabbed the jaw of the first beetle to leap, and brutally snapped off its lower jaw. He ignored the second, and at the last moment an arrow slid forward through the space under his arm and hit the attacking beetle through the head. The beetle faltered in confusion, and Dozer brought his huge club to bear, smashing the beetles to pieces. His squad surged with him, sharing Dozer's fury that one of their own had been wounded. They smashed 12 beetles with their wild blows. Dozer felt light taps on his shoulders, but ignored it.
Dozer, baby, you should really be more careful, Annie rebuked, standing on his shoulders and smoothly firing arrows into the crowd of beetles, buying time for Dozer's squad to fall back and regroup. Making a girl work so hard, even while she's wearing a skirt.
Almost instinctually, Dozer glanced up while drinking a stamina potion, and sure enough, he could see right up his woman's skirt to her lacy red panties. She hopped off Dozer and patted his back, winking. Make sure you come back alive. She sauntered off, a definite swing to her hips, heading to reinforce another area. Feeling a heat unrelated to the battle rising within him, Dozer unwillingly turned back to the beetles. Once Randedly finished admiring his new gains, he loped through the surrounding woodlands to the highway. To his surprise, it took him another hour to catch up to Alana and the rest of the convoy. They must have made extremely good time this morning to have almost reached the halfway point between Franksburg and Donnyton. Congratulations, your skill Sneak has grown to level 34. Randedly's eyes narrowed. He'd been thundering through the brush, aiming for the sound of voices from the convoy, but the sudden skill level in Sneak instantly put him on guard. In the past, such a skill level up saved his life from walking right in front of the deadly web spinner. He settled into a crouch, easing his way between tree trunks until he could see what was happening on the highway. Most of the people from Franksburg were waiting back by the idling truck. Alana and the squad were out in front, talking to a small group of people Randedly didn't recognize. A man at the front grinned constantly, gesturing widely at Alana and Devon, who regarded him with frowns. Randedly pressed his lips together. A group of people. But based on their clothes, they're even more ragged than Donnyton's. It looks like they just hacked chunks out of a monster's hide without any sort of knowledge of tanning or sewing. And considering how dirty they are they not from Franksburg? He wrestled over whether he wanted to get involved. Randedly didn't miss the way the five men behind their smiling leader glanced around surreptitiously, eyeing the well-made weapons and armor of Donnyton's convoy. Their eyes were filled with greed. Meanwhile, Alana shook her head emphatically. Even the smiler's expression twitched. Sighing, Randedly pushed himself out of the brush and hopped onto the highway, walking purposefully toward the rough-looking group. Alana, Devon, what's going on? Devon twisted around with a look of relief, but Alana simply grunted and gestured at the individuals in front of them. This is Desmond and his crew. Apparently they've been wandering south after being ambushed. They have many wounded women and children with them at a temporary base, a little bit to the west. They want our help.
I don't understand why this is such a difficult issue, the smiling Desmond focused on Randedly. His teeth were very white.